Hello, everybody. Welcome to IntelliCast. This is season 4, episode something. 15, I think?
15.
Yeah, you just told me and I already forgot. Episode 15, thank you for listening. It is brought to you by EMI Research Solutions. You can email us at IntelliCast@EMI-RS.com. Follow us on Twitter, EMI_research, IntelliCast1 on Twitter. And you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 513-401-5463. Today, we're joined by two of my favorite people, Dan Fletcher, who is the Executive Director of Operations at Sample Chain. He also spent a number of years at Lucid, been in research for a while, and Sample Chain does great things. But they have a new name now we can announce, right?
That's right, Research Defender.
Research Defender. So no longer Sample Chain. They're now called Research Defender, spelled normal. I mean, imagine that, yeah. Research Defenders spelled normal. So happy for all the people at Sample Chain. They've been great partners with us for a while, Dan and Vignesh and their whole team. Also joining us is Chuck Miller, who's been a friend of the MI and podcast for a long time. He's the president of DM2, which stands for Digital Marketing and Measurement. He's been in the industry for quite a while. Was at DMS. If you don't know DMS, that was like the AOL sampling solution that was around in the early 2000s. Was also at USAMP and been out on his own in Dallas as a consultant for quite a while. But Chuck's a good guy, super smart. And I love this discussion because it's Dan from kind of the technical standpoint of data quality and fraud, what the industry and what they're doing in terms of fraud. And then Chuck and I talking a lot about how there's other things we can do and from more of an insights perspective in terms of data quality. I think it's probably cool. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, it's a well-rounded discussion on data quality.
Yep. Good way to put it. And then one more thing before we get to the interview, I wanted to mention a press release that came out. You probably saw it on our social or check it out if you like. But a press release around... 4 Cincinnati-based marketing research and insights firms, we partnered on this new internship program, and it's called MAP, which stands for Minority Access Partnership Program, and it's Burke Incorporated, you may have heard of them, Directions Research, and Market Vision, 3 very large, prominent, full-service marketing research and insights firms, and then us. So the 4 Cincinnati-based companies really putting this together. And Brian, you've been heavily involved in this as well, as have I. It's been rewarding, and we're just really getting started, right?
It has, yeah. I mean, I probably have a meeting once a week with this cross team from all the other three organizations.
Yeah,
it's been great getting to know some of like my counterparts, but 2, working on this program. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how 4 companies can work together. And the other 3 are really kind of competitors. And so putting that aside for the betterment of the industry in terms of getting more diverse talent into marketing research, I'm just so impressed with seeing how these people work and getting insight into, these are great companies. Burke, Market Vision, and Directions Research are just amazing companies. It's awesome from a personal and professional level to be working with them. And then, you know, working on such an amazing initiative, and we're going to establish partnerships with kind of different universities than we normally recruit from, possibly junior colleges, trade schools, and historically Black colleges in the area to really provide different opportunities. It'll be internships. It'll be hiring full-time people. We're hoping to expand this and maybe mentor at the high school level. But, man, I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, I am as well. Would you say this is probably one of the first one, at least one of the first ones I've seen where like 4 companies in the area that, as you've mentioned, some are competitors, kind of get together to do something like this?
It has to be. Maybe it's been done before, and I apologize if I'm not aware of it. But here in Cincinnati, obviously a hotbed for research, these companies working together. And by the way, this isn't the first time we've all worked together. It's probably the biggest initiative that we've worked on. But, you know, in the Cincinnati community, market research is huge, and we all know each other and aware of each other. And you know, it's obviously incestuous in terms of hiring and stuff. But, I mean, C-level people are on this committee. It's not just, you know, an HR person. It's C-level owners of the company that are on this committee. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
So check it out on our website if you'd like to learn more about the program. More to come this summer as we start taking action. And that's one of the most important things. We're not just going to be talking about it. We're going to be actually doing stuff about it. So more to come. But I hope you really enjoy this interview. Back to the interview with Dan and Chuck around data quality, which is such an important topic. And here you go. Joining us now, we have Dan Fletcher and Chuck Miller. Hey, guys. Thanks for joining.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, Dan's the executive director of operations at Sample Chain, and Chuck, his job title is officially president at DM2, which is digital marketing measurement. It's his own company, but he's a former president of USAMP, president at AOL DMS. So he's been around a little while and very
consulting. Spent some time on the supplier side before AOL. So yeah, kind of seen it all.
Super excited to have these two guys on as we kind of continue our conversation around data quality. And, you know, Dan being working in operations at Sample Chain and Chuck being around just in the industry for so long. I think that's a great episode. We're going to talk about kind of trends, and we'll talk a little bit about an article that Bronnie Breslauer of Disco put on Green Book a couple weeks ago. But maybe just we'll start off with kind of like some bigger trends that we're seeing kind of in the industry. Dan, I'll start off with you. Like, what's going on in the industry from your perspective?
Yeah. yeah, thanks, guys, for having us. Super excited to be here. Yeah, happy to talk a little bit about what we've seen on our end. You know, I mean, I think it's sort of equal parts what we're hearing from the customer side of things, then also what we're seeing in our data. You know, we talked a little bit back in December about the, you know, the Q4 election cycle and the impact that had on the industry. Huge spikes in the demand for surveys, especially around the election, and a perhaps outpacing supply in some elements. You know, we definitely saw an uptick in fraud as a result of that. You know, we saw a lot of the exchanges and platforms that we worked with having to really increase their CPIs to get that sample, and that led to a lot of fraud. And so I think we talked about that a lot back in Q4, but we've seen a good return to normalcy from our side of things. You know, we had a huge spike a couple of weeks ago for the last week of Q1, very big spike, you know, that leveled out last week and the week before, but very positive for, I think, macro trends in the industry. You know, from a sort of global standpoint, I think when we see macro events like COVID, we tend to see more fraud. You know, it makes sense. I mean, there's, you know, a dip in the economy due to COVID leads to, you know, more people unemployed. I mean, think about it, all the people at our home. It's essentially everybody, lots of time on their hands, low opportunity cost of that time. We always think about things as opportunity costs. What's the, you know, in terms of our MO and how we try to block sample, but it's definitely worth it for a lot of time for these fraudsters to spend at home and, you know, trying to break into these surveys. So we're busy.
Yeah, I bet. And Chuck, I bet that all the things he's talking about, that puts some challenges on from your perspective, right? When there's a quality concerns, there's a spike, that makes it tough on you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm advising a number of companies on data quality. So for me, fraud, data quality elements kind of all blend together at the end of the day from an insights perspective, right? So there definitely have been challenges last year, and we saw that escalate throughout the year. And, you know, in general, we've always talked about fraud and data quality and stuff as kind of an escalating arms race, right? I mean, it's something that we've been working for 20 plus years at this point in online research to try and to tamp down. And it seems like as soon as we come up with something, you know, to combat an element, there's always something else popping up to address. But yeah, so from kind of an insights perspective, I think, you know, some of the stuff that I've seen this past year, you know, fraud manifests, you know, typically as brand overstatement, both from kind of an attitude and usage standpoint. That can be kind of a key indicator. People see changes in data, you begin to dig, and sure enough, you know, a lot of fraud, you know, comes across as people overstating in an attempt to qualify and provide happy data and provide the data that they think people want to hear. So, you know, that's kind of some of the stuff that we see. You know, I think that in terms of other trends, I've seen more people, I think, paying attention to really looking at kind of different sources and examining kind of inherent characteristics. It used to be that we would kind of lump together different types of sample, river sample, panel sample, all of that. I think that people have gotten wise to, you really can't look at it necessarily by type anymore. You really need to dig down to the provider level, look at the characteristics you're getting there. So I've seen, you know, greater emphasis on that. That was something that I had, you know, always kind of preached when I was at AOL. It was something that, you know, we developed one of the first river samples and we would draw people from across AOL properties, Time Warner properties. And I always worried about what are the underlying characteristics now that I'm sourcing from sportsillustrated.com or CNN.com. And demos held constant don't necessarily mean you're going to get the same data.
Right.
On source. So I think people are a bit more wise to that, which is fantastic. And then maybe, you know, one more might be more time spent looking at device type. People beginning to realize that, you know, mobile is such a high percentage of surveys that you really need to think about mobile respondents differently than desktops. And, you know, it all comes together to form the whole. It's not necessarily one or the other, and you need to design for both and those kinds of things, you know, help data quality, but also kind of help on the fraud front too, making sure that you've got, you know, good responding experience and all of that at the end of the day is going to get you to the right data at the end. So just some of the trends I've been seeing.
Well, I have so many follow-ups just from both of you guys on the first question. So maybe I'll go back to you, Dan. You mentioned that, like, we saw a surge in fraud last week. We saw, you know, at the end of last year as well. What does it kind of look like from your perspective? Like, how do you recognize it? What are the things that you're kind of, the identifiers maybe, like, oh, we have something going on here. What does it kind of look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we've, you know, I think all of us in particular, because we're all working with third-party data, in its purest sense, we're just trying to look for outliers in the data. You know, we've layered a lot of machine learning models to do regression analysis and decision trees and a number of those methods we're really just looking at, you know, all the different variables that we have for respondents. You know, it goes as high as IP addresses and down all the way to metadata within a, you know, a user agent, and just looking for anomalies, things that look very out of the ordinary. Subnets are a pretty high correlative variable on there too. You know, what that would mean is, you know, IP addresses that are just slightly off, as those are probably people that aren't on VPNs or proxies, but are just really, you know, changing their IP addresses within their home network. So it's a lot of little things, and we're just trying to look for outliers. The subnets one is a big one we've seen blow up. We're seeing a lot of within the same survey, you know, these slight variations in IP addresses. But also, I mean, you know, our models give us a lot of that information too. And just saying, okay, you know, this survey was seeing, you know, 2 respondents a minute, and now it's seeing 200 respondents a minute, and they all look kind of similar. So throw up the red flag, and we're blocking a lot of this traffic, but also we need to let our supply chain know that that's happening so they can action off of it. Yeah. So yeah, at its purest sense, it's just anomalies in what we'd expect.
Well, that makes sense. And Chuck, you mentioned a good point that I always recommend as well about device usage and looking at device type. And one thing is, I feel like we have more information on especially mobile devices than we used to. That's helpful for me, but like, what are you looking for when are you sorting the data by device or sorting potential fraud by device? Or is it just one other thing that you're looking at in addition to, like, you know, open ends and other fraud checks?
Yeah, a lot of times it's, you know, quickly looking at it by device type. You know, especially things like open ends, you know, it's something that we know that, you know, typically you're gonna have a little shorter open end. But, you know, really looking at, patterns. And, you know, it kind of goes back to the survey design too, and making sure that you think the survey design was appropriate, because you're, you know, potentially going to have more overstatement with a clickable mouse on multi-list response type questions than you might on a mobile device, things like that. Just looking for some patterns in the data, and just being conscious of survey design. I think that we know that, your real estate is limited. Attention spans tend to be a little bit more limited, it appears, on mobile devices as well. There was an old APOR standard that, 18 minutes is the time that you need to worry about in terms of survey length, because over 18, you're going to start to see decreases in data quality and things like that. And I think today it's more like 12 to 15 max, and gravitating toward the shorter end, when you're working with mobile devices.
Yep. And another thing that you mentioned, which I just had a conversation with a client about, is brand overstatement, which, man, it gets tough when you're talking about data and, you know, when people are evaluating brands, and especially during a weird period of time, such as COVID, when people's kind of attitudes and behaviors are already changing, right? We're all over the place. So it's less predictable or understandable maybe than in a normal environment. And then on top of that, you have the influence of possible fraud and possible poor quality. I know that for me, that's really tough to kind of manage when you're talking to clients. I bet it is for you as well.
It has. Yeah. I've been called in to help analyze a number of situations this year where tracker data has changed. And you just have to, go through the motions of looking at it by device type, looking at it by source provider, all these different things to kind of tease out where you think the change came from. And then from there, you can begin to dig, is it actually fraud? Was somebody infiltrated the cottage industry of the group of folks coming in to try and get incentives, or bots, or something along those lines? But it just takes lots of teasing out of the data in many cases.
Yeah. Well, I love having you both on, because we all have to kind of work together as a team on this, right? Like, you have Dan, who's monitoring this almost basically for his living, right? And then you trying to take that data set and ensure it's right for the client. Like, all of these groups of people, all of us have to kind of work together, right? It's imperative.
Absolutely. And I really think, as much as anything, it starts at the very beginning too, right? I mean, there's so much that we can do from the sample definition level and the screening level and the survey instrument and all of those things that at the end of the day are really going to help us get to the final output. And, along the way, embedded in some of that are things that we do to try and prevent fraud, things like red herrings, and so forth. And just being really mindful about how you're going about things, not trying to be too heavy handed, because when you get too heavy handed, you actually begin to exclude people that should be represented in your data set. Right. So there's a nice balance of art and science there. Love the work I'm doing with Dan and team right now, because there's some great science elements to bring to this, but there's, kind of the holistic side too, that, kind of blends it all together, like you said.
Yeah. The responding experience is something that it's tough to balance. Like, I hate designing surveys that say, what is your age? And then what is your birth date? And you have to match that. And then you say, what color is the sky? And what is 2 plus 2? And then you ask them to do a conjoint exercise. It's really kind of crazy what we put respondents through, right?
It is. And things like, birth year, birth date, even those, we begin to see differences, right? So there's a percentage of people that just start to get edgy when you ask for the birth date, but they'll give you the birth year. So, you really should only ask for what you need, and enough to get you through kind of the gates that you want to put in place, to provide quality, because, you don't want to exclude people that won't provide birth date if, in fact, they really ought to be represented. So.
And the people that get mad and drop out of a survey because they don't want to answer what noise a bird makes, that's not good either.
Right? Yeah. And when it comes to the red herrings, the one that I, I really like the best is the statement of multiple low incidence items. Yeah. You know, this is stuff we played around with at AOL 20 years ago. You know, what kinds of questions do you put in as gates? And, you know, we found the things like, you know, to ensure that you're paying attention, please check the box or check the button on the left or at the far right. People that don't take surveys, they don't understand what you're doing here. Wait a minute, I'm clowing through. I'm in the mindset of answering these questions. And what is this that you just put in front of me? You know?
Right.
So things like, you know, which of these have you done in, you know, the last 3 months, applied for pet insurance, applied, you know, just random things that, you know that if you state three things that are, you know, less than 5% incidents, you got a good chance that this is somebody that's just trying to qualify and game the system.
Right. And Dan, I'm going to go back to you to see, you mentioned there was a little bit of a surge last week. Is there anything else that maybe happened in Q1 or any kind of noteworthy types of fraud that you, that you're seeing now that might be just kind of unique or different?
Yeah. good question. So, I mean, we've seen, I think I mentioned subnets before. That's something we've been focused on. We have a few releases that we've, that have gone out this past week and will in future weeks, as far as to stop and at least start tracking that more, you know, so that we can sort of correlate it to removals down the line and see, you know, is this a highly correlative or mostly or what, you know, I mean, there's always edge cases with issues like that too. You know, if somebody's running a small zips or study with just a number of zips, I mean, there's probably going to be some IP overlap in there anyway. So, you know, it's one of those ones, just like anything in this world where we're actually controlling traffic, it's got to be very, very careful with any levers you pull. I mean, to the best of our knowledge, we're seeing the increased traffic that's linked to fraud coming from, we've seen an uptick from the Venezuela area as well as India. So those are two areas we've seen, you know, I mean, we'll see some of the things that we've seen come through our end is a lot of respondents who they'll have an open end where the message will be in English, but it clearly is written by somebody where English is their second language, which in itself is not, you know, a problem. But when you get 30, 40 answers in a row like that, that all kind of have the similar patterns, things look a little weird. So, So, I mean, that's where we use, we've been updating our natural language processing tools, our text analytics tool we have called Review to focus a little bit closer on grammar to be able to catch those types of things and flag them. Those are the big things coming out of Q1, I would say.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of Venezuela. It makes sense, right? With what's going on in Venezuela, it would make sense that you'd have an increase of fraud from that country. You mentioned IP a lot, which kind of gets me to the next topic around browsers. And this is something that I always defer to Brian Peterson when I talk about cookies and what's going on with browsers. And because I don't really understand this world, and even though we've talked about it on the podcast, I don't know how many times, probably 4 or 5 times now, I still don't get it. But I bet that there's an impact from your perspective, Dan, around with what's going on in the industry with cookies and browser advancement and what Google's doing. So I don't know if you want to talk about that, but I'd love to hear your perspective on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I caught up, I think, on the last episode. I thought Brian did a great job explaining it. So if anybody wants a refresher, they could probably go back and go through that. It's a great question. It's, you know, cookieless is the definite buzzword and the talk of our, you know, our world in terms of things that we're focused on. And, you know, to be honest, I think it actually impacts, you know, people on the marketing and advertising side way more than it does us in a lot of ways. You know, we built our technology around being able to survive in a cookieless world. You know, we certainly use it when it's there, and we have used it. It's a data point. It would be silly not to, right? But you know, with the move to the sort of opting out of first-party cookies, or sorry, of third-party cookies, you know, it just gives us one less variable to be able to use to make a decision and to identify the same respondent. But we've kind of put our focus on away from that in the past anyway. You know, so it shouldn't have a huge impact. You know, slightly lower rates of conversion on digital fingerprinting and things along those lines. But, you know, like anything, we'll adjust over time. You know, I think it'll be a slow rollout on all this. And there's still, you know, a number of a good percentage of our traffic where we still see, you know, the browsers, the cookies from the browsers. So we're just trying to stay on top of it.
Cool. And that kind of leads me into the next topic, where Bonnie Breslauer, she put a article. She works at Disco and she's been in the industry for a long time. Everybody knows Bonnie. And mm-hmm. She wrote an article entitled Market Research Fraud on the Rise, Let's Conquer Together. I love the kind of overall theme of it, which is really collaboration, which is why all we're here today is collaborating to help talk about this challenge and help maybe others and work together as an industry to conquer. Because I've said before, I really think the insights, whatever you want to call our industry, ResTech, insights, survey research, is not working at full capacity. I think we can double or triple in size if we can provide more confidence in decision makers, that data is real. I think there's a lot of skepticism, and some of it's certainly warranted, but some of it maybe isn't. But the theme of our article talks about knowing the enemy, which we've talked about a little bit, protecting the experience of good panelists, and we've talked about that as well. And she talked a little bit about innovating new defenses, AI, machine learning, biometrics. That's one that's a little bit foreign to me. I know there's a lot of innovation out there, and that's why your company exists, is all of the things that you're doing. Is there anything else in the article or kind of just the general theme that you wanted to address or talk about?
I'd say machine. Go ahead, Dan. You go first.
Thanks, Chuck. Yeah, I did read that article. I thought it was great. I worked closely with Bonnie early in my career, and love everything she has to say here. I thought that at the high level, just the general, we should be working together more on this is right on. I mean, you know, you think about the hits that the political polling industry has taken from 2016 and 2020 with, you know, whether or not you want to argue those were misses, there's a perception that it was a miss, and that causes the data to be questioned. And, you know, I think that's bad for that industry. And I think we should sort of think that way too, and be working together. You know, we're all going to try to get a leg up and have a better technology and market ourselves that way. But the basics here, we're all working with the same variables and trying to extrapolate those in a manner where we can try to weed out fraudsters, and we should be sharing that information. So, you know, overall, I just really like the theme of it.
I agree. Bonnie's great. She and I go back a long ways. We actually worked in the same department of about 25 people at Mark Research many years ago. Yeah. So we've known each other for quite some time.
I'll get stories off the air.
Exactly. But I absolutely loved the tone of it as well. I think it's, you know, exactly what we all need to be doing. What I was going to say on the machine learning front is I'm really excited about kind of the NLP and text analytics that we can do with looking for fraud in open ends and B2B studies and things like that, where we're asking people to explain their job, you know, or give some kind of relevant information that only a qualified, you know, professional should be able to give, and being able to kind of look at that stuff in a little more detail to weed out the fraud in B2B, since that tends to attract people and fraudsters a little bit more, given high incentives and things like that. So, great article, great tone, and, you know, exactly where we need to be working together.
Awesome. Anything else we would like to talk about in terms of fraud, survey quality, respondent experience? Did I miss anything?
No, I think the only thing I would say, you know, is kind of just restating what I said earlier, is it's everything along the chain, right? So, you know, don't depend solely on technology to solve your problems. You got to take some ownership and responsibility, you know, for your survey, research yourself, and think about, you know, the sampling, think about the screening, the survey instrument, who you're engaging, the devices you're engaging them on, and you know, it is a bit of art and science that needs to kind of come together, you know, as we're doing this together.
Yeah, I love that message, Chuck, that it's amazing how often I see a data file that has a really poorly written screener, and a really strong screener is so important to ensure that it's not easy for anyone to just get through, that you're talking to the right people. And then the questionnaire design, I think it's, those are skills that unfortunately we, there used to be a lot of rigor around questionnaire design. That
there was, and I, yeah, I mean, I hate to sound like the old guy in the room, but you know, it does seem like, you know, not as much attention is paid in many cases to those sorts of things. And it can just, you know, have such a huge impact on what you get at the end of the day in terms of the final data set and the insights that come from it.
Yeah, I always think back to my days. I was a telephone interviewer, and this is a long time ago, the late 90s. And I remember that, and this still happens today, that a group of telephone interviewers would get into a room and there'd be a briefing where they would go through the entire questionnaire. And let me tell you, these telephone interviewers are detail-oriented. They would question every little word on that questionnaire, yeah, right? And that would help the questionnaire design because they understood how a respondent hears the question. They hear the question or read the question in the case, yep, of online, different than how we as researchers think. And so that was such an important step in the process. And I hope that for some reason we've been doing, I mean, we're well into 20 plus years in doing online research. And I don't know, we've never, generally, I'm speaking very general, we've never, yeah, really kind of taken that cue, that quality check.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, I remember, you know, I was doing research on, you know, phone and mall and paper before there was online. So I totally get what you're saying and know that that is a huge part of the questionnaire design process, that we would get feedback, yeah, from the Watts Center saying, hey, you know, we've got,
yeah,
you know, people are, think we might want to do this way. So, you know, maybe in those cases, the replacement is that you know, you run it by a colleague, right? You know, I know we're all busy and everything, but yeah, don't be afraid to, you know, either ask a colleague or ask, you know, a sample provider or somebody you're working with, get another opinion on, you know, hey, is there a better way to do this? Or is this the right approach? Or, you know, what are the implications of certain things?
Yeah, and the point of this is that Dan and his team, they can do a lot to prevent fraud and to help with data quality, but the researchers have a huge role in this and working collectively. So, Dan, I don't know if there's anything to add on your end in terms of what you guys are doing to help the researchers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll say, like, I do spend, I think partnerships is a word that I've, you know, tried to it's something I've tried to develop with all the customers that I work with and over the years. And I think it's so key in this element too. I mean, you know, yeah, you mentioned survey design. You know, a lot of, if we get an escalation of, hey, this doesn't seem right for XYZ, you know, the first thing I'll try to do is get a copy of the screener and the survey itself and try to understand what the, you know, objectives of the survey was. You know, it might be, listen, it might be a bot that got into your survey and it might be that easy, but it might just be that the way it was written or the logic or something didn't make sense. And that's, you know, and it's all data points that we can look at. And, you know, I mean, one of the reasons I love this job is it's just a giant puzzle, right? It's, yeah, you've got, yeah, you know, it's a little bit more, it's pretty abstract from the survey standpoint. And then we just have an insane amount of data on that we can layer on top of that and, try to tell the story. So now, and I say partnership in that it's, you know, I think it's understanding what the objectives were. You know, I'm happy to offer my expertise for what it's worth on the research side of things, although I tend to leave that to the experts. But you know, if you can come back and understand that, I think we're all better for it. You know, we update our model quite often with insights we find about, you know, especially on like the text analytics side of things, you know. We're literally it's natural language processing. We're getting a sentence and trying to make sense of it without even the context of the question itself. So you know, I love learning about what the objective was so that we can train our model to actually understand whether it's the right or wrong answer as far as what was being asked. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And Yep. And on the puzzle solving and insane amount of data front, I love the extra data that I've been able to work with when sample chains engaged in studies, because it does, on top of, you know, all of the survey data and the behavior that you can trace there, give you a lot of context for what else is going on behind the scenes and what the data represents. So it's, you know, part of solving the puzzle. And that's kind of a neat new front to be working in.
Well, I really appreciate you guys coming on and having this kind of discussion around quality. How can people, if people want to reach out to you, Chuck, how can they reach you?
Email is great. Chuck at DM2, which stands for digital marketing measurement, as you said. Chuck at DM2corp.com.
Okay. And Dan, how can people reach you? And if you want to like tease any maybe press release that might have happened already, feel free to do that as well.
What a coincidence you brought that up. That's yeah, absolutely. You can reach out to me at dfletcher@samplechain.co for now, until next week, at which point we will be dfletcher@researchdefender.com. We are announcing our rebrand on Monday the 19th, which will, by the time this launches, have already happened. So you heard it here first, if your name is Brian, and if not, you probably heard it with the rest of the industry 2 days ago, I think, after this launch. So yeah, we're super excited about that that announcement. I think it brings a little clarity in terms of what our objective and our mission is in the marketplace. And
I'll save my making fun of your name till the next episode, but it's too perfect. It explains exactly what you do, and it's spelled correctly. So congratulations to you and your team. That's a big rebranding. I love it.
Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate that. And thanks for having us on. This was great.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening. And please reach out to Dan or Chuck if you have any additional questions. They're certainly experts on this topic, and two of the best. So thanks for listening. Well, cool. Thanks everybody for listening. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. I really did. You know, the main thing that I learned is that, well, I didn't learn, but what I loved we talked about was how, you know, we depend on companies like Sample Chain and Research Defender and others to provide good quality sample, but it's not only them, right? That's one piece of the puzzle. You have to work with people like Chuck, work with people like us. You have to have a good questionnaire. And so, you know, it's a big team effort.
Yeah, this was a great interview. I feel smarter. I didn't really talk much during this interview, but I felt smarter when we were done with it.
You've talked a lot in recent episodes. You needed a little break, I think.
I think I did, yeah.
Well, thanks for listening. More episodes coming your way soon. If you have any suggestions on topics, guests, please let us know. Thanks, everybody.